It's been 25 years since Art Spiegelman's Mouse was published. His two-part epic graphic novel, which dealt with his father's memories of the Holocaust, has earned him much acclaim, including a Pulitzer Prize, but it has also led people to ask him the same questions over and over again. Why the Holocaust? Why mice? Why comics? Perhaps that's why he's answered all of them in his latest book called MetaMouse, an exhaustive compilation of the ideas, drawings, artifacts, and interviews that he immersed himself in during the 13 years it took to complete the project. It also comes with an interactive DVD archive of the complete Mouse files, which include audio interviews with his father, photos, notebooks, drawings, essays, and more. MetaMouse is published by Pantheon Books, and I'm very pleased to welcome Art Spiegelman back to our show today, along with Hilary Shute, who collaborated on some aspects of this project. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Art, wasn't it difficult to find a publisher at first? You include a lot of rejection letters.
I think everybody in the entire Eastern Seaboard rejected it, including Pantheon, who eventually took it on a second round. And I understand them, you know. It's a comic book, And at that time, comics couldn't have been in more disrepute about the Holocaust, a subject that was too sacred for even most extrapolative fiction or something, let alone comics. Why would anybody do it? And even if they thought it was good, where would they put it in a bookstore?
Did you believe in it, or were you surprised by just how successful it became?
Well, are those exclusive categories? Of course I believed in it. I mean, I spent 13 years ultimately doing it.
No, but I mean,
did
you believe you were going to have the kind of
Every once in a while, you know, you'd be sitting at 4 in the morning, like, finishing a drawing and thinking, fantasizing what it would be like to be on, David Letterman or something, you know, and realizing that's a daydream, or you should be asleep now, dream. But basically, I figured this book, because it was narrative, had a reason to find a larger public than I was finding with some of the other material I was making. And yet, when it was coming out, my editor was comforting me, saying, you know, we do lots of books that sell 3,000 copies, and if they're good books, by God, we're glad. Why don't you go on vacation when the book comes out so you don't get depressed? And that seemed reasonable to me as advice. And yeah, I was not dressed for success.
You're right that Mouse was the book that made you and has haunted you ever since.
Yeah, I keep getting chased by the 500-pound mouse everywhere I go. And on the one hand, I'm glad to have a companion. And on the other hand, it's eerie to have to always be working against this crossover hit that I had, you know?
Well, yeah, the mouse begins with a character named Art Spiegelman donning a mouse mask in order to put his father's story on paper. And now in this book, you begin by saying you want to take the mask off because you can't breathe. And when you rip it off, you're just a skeleton underneath.
That's the fear. It's comics are a way to visualize one's innermost fears and dreams. And I guess that's there. But ultimately, I think I am what the word ambivalence was invented for. I'm very, very grateful to have made something that looks like it's got a chance to keep living and breathing so many years after it was made and into my foreseeable future. And yet it's a kind of strange obligation and obstacle. And this book, MetaMouse, was a way of trying to turn around and stare that rodent down.
Well, you visited our show not long after Mouse was published. And everybody was asking you the same questions, the ones that I mentioned earlier. Why do a comic book about the Holocaust? Why mice? Why comics? And then we got an email from a listener this morning. He says, when I read Mouse, I completely enjoyed it until I came to the bit where the British were represented as fish, being British. I took great objection to this since thousands of British soldiers and civilians, the Blitz, died during the Second World War. If it hadn't been for the valiant efforts of the RAF during the Battle of Britain to fend off the relentless attacks of the Luftwaffe, there wouldn't have been an island base from which to launch the D-Day attacks. And he goes on to defend the British role in World War II. So why did you make them the fish? I understood the mice and the pigs.
Okay, and for me it had to do with, at this point I thought the whole animal metaphor had served its purpose, thank you, but I couldn't switch to humans, and yet I wanted to have the British have at least a swim-on part because they were the ones occupying, taking charge of Bergen-Belsen when my father went passed that on the way back to Poland. And I was desperately trying to find a mask to put on them, not believing in my masks any more than I expected intelligent British people or others to believe in my masks. And so I figured, okay, fish and chips, an island nation separated from the rest of Europe by a body of water, cold fish, all of fish
stiff
and chips,
lip.
all of that. And I figured, okay, what the heck? Here we go, you know? But I did not expect anybody to like try to like chase my metaphor down to the nth degree, because it's Hitler's metaphor that we're dealing with subhumans and different species rather than different tribes.
Are people asking you different questions when they talk about this book than they did initially?
I wish. Well, I think there's a finite number of questions. So even though I phrase that cluster of three questions, which become the chapters in the book, facetiously, I understand that those are the questions that this book arouses, and I'm reconciled. Every once in a while, something comes up, and I don't kind of have enough of a memory to keep good track, but some of them are real conversations.
You structure the book around a series of conversations you had with Hillary Shute, who's here. How did this relationship begin, Hillary?
Well, it's actually a funny story. I had written an essay about Maus that was published in a very small online comics criticism magazine. Art read it, he liked it, and he invited me to a cocktail party at his house. And then we started talking about Maus, and we started realizing that we had a lot of the same interests in terms of talking about comics form, and he asked me to collaborate with him on this project. So when I first came on, we came up with the structure of the MetaMouse book together, the Why the Holocaust, Why Comics, and Why Mice. So the structure was something that we, it came out of our conversations.
But then you also asked him some questions that he doesn't seem to be all that eager to answer.
Well, I have to say one thing I really liked about working with Art is he's incredibly intellectually generous. And we taped conversations for 2 years and had them transcribed and then whittled them down to condense it into this book. And he let me ask him a lot of questions that he wasn't comfortable with. And I appreciated that he was open to that.
I gave Hillary total run of the studio, so she was finding everything from old love letters to suicide notes.
Yes.
And that was part of inviting her in to do this with me. But basically, it's because Hillary's an academic, and talk about different tribes. I'm very suspicious of a number of the people I've met who couch their insights in a kind of pseudo-scientific jargon, most of it literary-based jargon, and are unable to look at pictures and unable to understand what a comic does. And Hillary was this anomaly. She wrote in plain English as an academic who was a fellow at Harvard and is now at University of Chicago, and knows how to look and knows how to articulate what she's looking at. It was an amazing discovery.
And you also interviewed Francois, Art's wife, and his kids.
Yes.
What could they tell you? They had nothing to do with Maus.
I think they had a lot of responses to the book that are relevant to taking stock of what Maus was in the world. So I was fascinated to learn, for example, from Nadja and from Dash, when they picked up Maus. It wasn't when they learned to read. For Nadja, it took her some number of years to feel comfortable looking at this book because she was learning things about her grandparents for the first time in a book that was already published and out in the world.
In fact, she tells you that she vividly remembers the moment she found out that her grandmother committed suicide while she was reading Prisoner on the Hell Planet. Had you kept the books from your
Not
kids?
At all. I gave it to both of them early. I said, look, it's toxic. Read it when you want. For both of them, that was a different moment. I would want to correct one thing, though, which is Françoise was an integral part of Maus. She wasn't some kind of recipient of it. You know, mm-hmm. I think even when we were getting together, I said, this person I could settle down with, and that would let me do a 300-page book. almost as overt as that. And I think part of it is that this particular book, insofar as it has a life of its own, MetaMaus, one of the things it has to articulate is memory and history, comics, but also family, the dysfunctional family of the past, my dysfunctional family of the present. And it's an essential weave in terms of trying to understand how Maus fits in my life.
I'm talking with Art Spiegelman about a new book called MetaMaus, which looks inside the creation of Mouse, published 25 years ago, becoming a modern classic, and with Hilary Shute, who participated in the project. The book is published by Pantheon. I got the feeling in the intervening years that you were almost purposely avoiding this subject, and the closest you even came, as I remember, were the strips about 9/11 that were published in the Forward and later as In the Shadow of No Towers. Were you just tired of talking about it?
Well, you know, I just vowed when finishing Mouse that I was not going to become the Elie Wiesel of comic books, and did everything I could to sidestep that. And even taking on that 10 or 11 year New Yorker gig of doing covers and strips for them and articles and essays involved trying to find a place to reinvent myself. The first book after, I think I came on and talked about with you, which was illustrating the Wild Party poem, because it was sensual, it was graphic, it was decorative.
And you weren't a character in it.
Yes. and I've been doing other comics since. It becomes, it's the hardest thing I know how to do, so it's very hard to get myself fully engaged. But it has been an issue of constantly wanting to reinvent myself before Mouse, during Mouse, and after.
Well, you wrote yourself into Mouse, and you suggested in an illustrated piece you did for the New York Times Magazine that you were just following that old literary advice to write what you know. But how much of the whole story did you really know before you began interviewing your father for the project? Had he told you much before then?
Well, he didn't tell me much until 1972, when I was doing a three-page comic strip that was my first foray toward Mouse. And then he told it all to me, everything he could tell, and that's the interview that's printed in the back of the book, the first interviews I did with my father, and it's also on the audio of that DVD. And that was as if he was waiting for me to be an adult and ask. As a kid, it was just like, nobody wants to hear such stories.
But a lot of people who have been through these kinds of experiences never want to talk about them because they bring back such terrible
memories.
And
yeah, I met some people who wouldn't tell me anything, who knew my mother. They just couldn't go there. And my mother, on the other hand, would leak stuff out. She'd just talk about it as if I already knew it all. And so I had very fragmentary, nightmarish views.
And then when you did research, you discovered that your father's memories weren't 100% accurate?
Well, that's part of memory, not just my father's memories. And that was something that had to be teased and worked with in the book. When you say, write what you know, the end part of that balloon was, it's kind of a problem for me. I don't really know anything.
You originally planned to keep the background images sketchy or blurry. Why did you decide to provide detailed images of the camps, finally?
That's interesting to me. And that's one of those questions that came up later, way after the Why Comics, blah, blah, blah. That was a good question, because I had to articulate it even for myself. What I thought was, as I got closer to the death camps, I couldn't visualize it. What is life in a death camp besides an oxymoron? And at first I thought I would do it in some kind of very sketchy Alfred Kubin-like set of marks to indicate that it's a haze I couldn't penetrate. And then I realized that the only way to even begin to penetrate it was to get it as articulated as I could, and had to do a lot of homework. Now I could just watch big-budget Hollywood movies and see how these barracks were built, but at the time it was each little brick was hard won.
You say your father often told the stories as if they'd been rehearsed. That must have frustrated you.
Yeah, it was frustrating, although again, since it's about memory and even that kind of interaction of, you told me that, let's move on, was part of what memory is. The stuff you've told yourself remains in your brain as the way you told it. You remember having remembered it. And moving toward territories where my father hadn't discussed it with anyone, it was really hard to get him to say what he remembered, but I'm not trying to say that as an indictment of him, although he frustrated me at every turn.
Well, a lot of people just answer with prepared statements. And I suspect when you were being interviewed after Mouse was published and all the years afterward, that sometimes you came up with canned answers.
Sometimes? Jeez. it was like having this random access disk where, okay, number 27, answer that one. Yes, okay. And on the other hand, what I'm doing now is I am not on a book tour. I'm talking to old friends, if I can arrange it. Like you, even though there's something so meta about being interviewed about a book that's built around interviews with Hillary and others, that's built around a book that was interviews with my father, leaves me trapped in some kind of crazy hall of mirrors. And of course, one relies on what becomes sound bites. When I listen to your show, I have this ongoing game for myself, because I listen to you while I'm working, as I've told you several times.
Except when you're writing the words down.
Yeah, when I'm writing the words, I can't. When I'm drawing the pictures, I can. But in the course of this, I'm listening to some interview and I'm going, man, he must be on the end of a 15-city tour, or he's just starting out, he hasn't gotten the bites down yet, or she. And you can sort of hear it in the tone of voice.
So, Hillary, how did you get past that when you were talking to Art?
Well, I think it's because we would talk for 5-6 hours at a time sometimes. I remember
we actually had a 13-hour
meeting. No joke. At some point, Art got up and made me a grilled cheese and got me a glass of wine, and we kept talking. I think it had to do with time, and it had to do with feeling like we could really relax in our conversation. It was a conversation we were just having with each other. We could explore. We could take out books from the shelves. We could look at certain panels.
And some of it also was trying to get the definitive soundbite down so that that could become a very short little part of a conversation and be some kind of emblematic, definitive answer to a question that was allowed to, like, also wander through other nooks and crannies.
But it can also be a learning experience for yourself, because even though you think you know all the answers, you're the creator of this book. When people ask you certain pointed questions, you then realize there are all sorts of things that you haven't thought about until then.
Yeah, in some ways, being interviewed is like psychotherapy.
Well, I have to say one thing I found difficult in terms of working on this book, but great at the same time, is that Art never wanted to know any of the questions I was going to ask him in advance. So when we would arrange a meeting to do an interview that we would tape, he never wanted me to let him know beforehand what the questions would be. So we were trying to keep an aspect of spontaneity the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Besides winning a Pulitzer, what are some of the other opportunities that Mouse has given you?
Oh, well,
it changed your life, obviously.
It did, and in ways that I'm still trying to reconcile all these years after. Well, gee, you know, I certainly had an open door in the sense that anything I want to publish, somebody will publish it, and that's important for an artist who works in print.
But people also, I'm sure, make assumptions about you. Because of what you've written about, they probably assume all sorts of things about your politics, the way you see the world.
Sure. And I think you mentioned In the Shadow of No Towers, the strips I did after September 11th, and one of the frustrations was I barely could find a home in America for it because it was just an unpopular set of opinions. And yet, although it came after Mouse and dealt with some kind of intersection between history and personal story, I only donned that Mouse mask occasionally in that series of pages. And yet, when I was showing it around, everybody was enthusiastic until they saw the pages, like at the New York Review of Books, where I was really excited about getting them and seeing them and seeing if they could run them. And then after an incredibly long wait, I got a response saying, this will be very popular in Europe. And at that point, my visceral response to answer your question was, yeah, you know, everybody likes what I've done, but nobody ever likes what I'm doing.
Art Spiegelman has been a staff artist and contributing editor at The New Yorker, as well as co-founder and co-editor of Raw, the acclaimed magazine of avant-garde comics and graphics. He's been here to talk about those things in the past. In addition to Mouse, he was, which was awarded the Pulitzer Prize and twice nominated for the National Book Critics Circle Award. He's the author of Breakdowns and In the Shadow of No Towers. He will be talking with Hillary Shute tonight at the 92nd Street Y. That's at 8 o'clock. For ticket information, go to our show page at WNYC.org. And MetaMouse, A Look Inside a Modern Classic, Mouse, has just been published by Pantheon Books. It has an accompanying DVD and all sorts of other interesting stuff. And I want to thank both of you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you. And you made this both psychotherapeutic and painless, Lenny. Thanks.
But you got to pay on the way out.